Welcome to Social Creatures, a podcast from Sprout Social. I'm Kat, and I'm here to explore some of my favorite success stories from the world of social media. This is a space for everyone, and really, nearly anything goes. But what makes an account successful or popular? Honestly, it's hard to know, but that's what we're here to find out. Throughout the series, we'll talk with the brains behind the accounts you know and some that you don't, to explore the weird and wonderful ways that businesses, organizations, and individuals have achieved success on social media, all with tangible insights that you can apply to your own social strategies. And we'll be heeding the advice of Stacey, our social media agony aunt, who's here to guide you through some of your trickiest digital dilemmas. So today I'm joined by Rich Myers from Get Baked. For those of you who don't know, Get Baked was in the center of a huge worldwide trend last year called Sprinklegate. As a result of that, Rich's followers have absolutely exploded, winning him media and fans from around the world. So I don't want to even get into it too much because I want to hear it from the man himself. Rich, Hi. Before we get into the whole big story about Sprinklegate, could you tell us a little bit about Get Baked for those of you who don't know about you? Like, how did you start and why are you different from other bakeries?
Yeah, Get Baked started actually in 2011 when I was early 20s, 21. And it was from an idea that I had to create a delivery service of sweet stuff because, you know, delivery didn't exist, Uber Eats didn't exist. There was nowhere that you could just get desserts delivered. It wasn't really a thing. It wasn't a market, whereas now it is everywhere. We set that up very quickly from a mum's kitchen and it took off really well. We went viral on Facebook quite regularly back then when Facebook was sort of a bit of a different place. Although we still do extremely well on Facebook. Where people struggle, we really don't. So yeah, we're a dessert-led bakery business. We've got one site currently. We're looking at sort of quite rapid expansion over the next 12 months, as well as being a sort of dessert brand. We're kind of an attitude and a style of humor and a brand in general. And we sell a lot of merchandise, so I guess we're also a merchandise company. Essentially, we make desserts, really. You know, that's what we do, really, as a core. And if we can't do that well, then everything else is just never going to work anyway.
Well, that is true, I have to say. But as someone who does not live locally to you and hasn't had a chance to try the cakes, it is interesting that I am a follower. And I think your point about being a brand is really accurate, you know, and it is definitely about an attitude. At the start of October last year, everything kind of changed for you. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about what happened at that stage?
We were using American imported sprinkles, which a lot of So there's a certain aesthetic that you get from using American sprinkles that some bakery businesses are very bothered about and some aren't. We are one of the ones that are very bothered by it. And this is not to be remotely disrespectful to any bakeries, but the ones that tend to care about the way their sprinkles look tend to be the ones selling better stuff. A lot of guys in London had the same feeling that I did towards the sprinkles. We were using sprinkles that were a lot more expensive than you can get in the UK. I mean, we could have spent, you know, considerably less money than we were and using British sprinkles, but we weren't. We were using the good stuff. And we were buying them from the UK. We weren't buying them from abroad. Anyway, it turned out that these sprinkles had an illegal EU number in them, which wasn't allowed to be used under EU regulation. So somebody knew that. I don't know who, but whoever it was, they reported us to Trading Standards. And then we one day randomly got a visit by Trading Standards who literally came in and said, "Hi, I know this might sound ridiculous and I'm sorry for having to do this, but are you being investigated for selling illegal sprinkles?" As ridiculous as it all is, it was very unpleasant at the time. It was quite intimidating. Nobody really wants to be investigated by Trading Standards because it's not nice. And you also think, well, what's this going to result in? Like, it sounds silly, but where will it end? And then we were told we couldn't use them pending investigation, which we didn't use them anymore, which affected our products because we used them quite a lot. And then essentially they came back to us and said, "Yeah, we've confirmed they are illegal. You can't use them and they all need to be destroyed." And then somebody picked it up on Twitter, somebody with hardly any followers, which is kind of the unusual thing. We've never used Twitter. It's not a platform we utilize. And then it just blew up, really. From there, then I capitalized on it, essentially, from that.
Of course, it makes so much sense that would have been scary because it's like integral to your business that, you know, you can continue to operate. But as you say, you capitalized on it. Your response wasn't one of fear. So I think your response got a lot of traction online, also in the press and on TV. And Sprinklegate ended up trending worldwide. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about, for those who don't know, what was your response online? How did you decide to play that out? And then why do you think it got so much traction?
So the way I build an audience and the way we successfully build a following is by me and our followers having an enemy. whether it's Dan is another enemy of ours, which you may or may not know about, or the Share Lloyd, which is an older one, Share Lloyd's from 2011, or Trading Standards, or there's Danielle, who's a female version of Dan. But essentially, if we don't have an enemy, I create one. And if we do have an enemy, then I utilize it. And essentially, the way I played it online was I was going to take on Trading Standards and make as much of it as physically possible. So that's all I did, really. All I did was capitalize on the press and then make sure that everything was to the absolute maximum volume it could have been, which it was.
I think that's a really interesting insight because I wasn't aware that that was necessarily the play. But what was really refreshing, and I wonder your thoughts on this, is that it seemed like a highly un-media trained response. Like in a world where people, like something like that happening, like Trading Standards coming in and being like, you know, you're under investigation for your sprinkles. I mean, there are other businesses that might have like hidden away and been ashamed, whereas your outburst was like so furious that it felt really, really authentic, you know, because in a way
it was totally authentic.
Yeah.
There was no...
And that's the thing. So this is something that I'm obsessed about on social media because I think the more authentic you can be, the better. And I think that's why people really liked it because it was not only like, this is totally... ridiculous that they're being investigated for sprinkles. It seems so trivial, like no disrespect to the sprinkles, because obviously I understand what you're saying, they make the cakes better, but it's so trivial. And you're being investigated and then your outburst as well was so absolutely correct. And then also there just was that funny juxtaposition of your fury over this tiny little sprinkle. I just thought it was like a perfect comic moment. And I think because it just felt so authentic as opposed to things where it's like a very hyper-drafted release, you know, and people were like, okay, we can get behind them. So I don't know, like, I'd love to hear what your thoughts on like that authenticity piece are.
What happened was it all snowballed very, very quickly. It was actually the BBC's biggest article worldwide of the year, which is insane. But a few PR companies got in touch and one of them rang, I spoke to her on the phone because I thought, oh, maybe I need someone here. Although I knew I didn't. I remember she said, you've got to be honest, you're playing this all wrong. I think that you need to take some advice because you don't want to end up in a position where you regret things you're saying before you've considered saying them. And I said, I think you're in the wrong industry. When you're involved in something like that and you're coming from a point of being authentic because you actually are, there's no wrong way to do it. Because all I was doing was saying what I felt and doing it in a way that I knew was going to work on the medium as it was being delivered, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. And I think, I mean, to the PR person's perspective, I can see why it could be like you're inviting crises and, you know, scandal.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I wanted. The more problems, the better. That's what I wanted. I wanted as much... If the CIA would have come after me, then I would have been delighted. Crisis is where I like to live, to be honest, in terms of... Because all that does is go back to what I said about a common enemy.
And I think, you know, as much as you say that you like to live in crisis, which is brilliant, this was not uncalculated on your part. Do you know what I mean? To what you just said, you knew that this was ultimately ridiculous. And if it was something where it was much more serious, you wouldn't have been inviting that chaos into your life. But I think what's interesting then, so this, as you've mentioned, was picked up by press around the world. Can you tell us a little bit about how your social media accounts were affected?
Facebook, I think we were always sat around 50,000. And then since Sprinklegate, we gained about 20,000 in about 48 hours. And then Instagram is what really blew up. So we were new to Instagram. So we only had, I think it was about 4,000 followers. And then we went 4,000 to about 68,000 in a day.
So insane.
And in terms of engagement, obviously, you know, your engagement on Instagram is dependent on how many followers you have. And how well received it is. It's as simple as that. And it's the same with Facebook. We don't tend to post content that isn't well received because if it's not going to be well received, I won't post it.
Now here at Sprout Social, we know that social media is a wild and wonderful beast. It can surprise and delight, but it can also confuse and perplex even the hardiest of social media users. Who better to turn to for help than our social media expert, Stacey Wright, who's here to answer your questions over a cup of tea and some biscuits in the part of the show we like to call Sound Advice.
Right, I've got my cup of tea and I've got my letters, which can only mean it's time for us to take a break and cozy down together. This is the part of the podcast where I, your social media agony aunt, Stacey, guide you, our dear listeners, through your trickiest digital dilemmas. Right, let me see what social media conundrums you've sent my way today. Dear Stacey, yesterday, Jeff from Operations sent me a one-liner email asking how to install two-factor authentication on his new phone so he could access all the work systems he needed. I should probably clarify here that I'm a social media producer, read categorically not IT. I pride myself on being a helpful, supportive person and building great internal relationships through the organisation, but the taps on the shoulder and the can you just messages about our online systems are getting me properly hacked off. Why do people think that because I work in social media, I have the ability to fix their online account issues? And how do I avoid people thinking I have a computer says no mentality? Seeking a hard reset for these requests, Mo. Mo, I can identify so strongly with this letter because once in a previous employment, my CEO, well, his security team, decided to ask me at 11 p.m. one night if I could remove images of his house from Google Earth. I really wanted to reply that I'm not a black ops hacker or on the board at Google to be able to do that. And I also think that the perception of us as social managers also depends on where you work. So coming from the arts and B2C brands, often I just got, oh, she's just paid to post pretty pictures rather than actually being mistaken for an IT consultant. But let's flip that perspective for a second. So Mo, if you're a social producer, you're always asking operations like Jeff here for access to locations for maybe live streams, or you've got loads of flashy hardware and wires and, you know, you're editing videos in the palm of your hand on a phone. Maybe Jeff has just got confused because he sees you with this techie glow around you all the time. But as you mentioned in the letter there, strong relationships throughout a business are really, really important for social managers because we often need access to areas, we want the best content coming through. So I feel like the real question underneath this is actually a little bit more profound in how do we more effectively communicate what the role of a social media person or team is within an organization, but more importantly, what is the value of what we're doing? One way to really start to tackle that effectively is to start showing the results more. So instead of being, look at what we created, here's a lovely piece of content, look at the impact of this piece of content. This is what it drove. This is how many people saw it. This is the perception of the business now from us creating it. And maybe ask from your people team or your HR team, like how far and wide they can disseminate those successes throughout the business, which is going to have a great impact for your team, but also like raising your internal profile. In addition, you might want to use a traditional IT technique of switch it off and switch it on again. So switch it off by creating those boundaries and saying no in a professional manner and leading people to seek that support elsewhere because it is not in your role. Then switch it back on again by having your intro down. When you meet new team members, set the tone. This is my job title and this is what I do. So when I meet new people as a solutions engineer here at Sprout Social, that job title can be a little bit mystifying for people that don't work in tech. So I often follow it up with, so I'll be your expert tour guide through the platform today. And I'll also act as a consultant on the best workflows for your team day to day and in achieving those social media goals. You can create the ideal framework of reference for your role and own it. Mo, thanks so much for emailing your social media quandary to us today. I hope that's been helpful in resolving your case of mistaken identity. And until next time, listeners, stay strong and stay social. And now back to the interview.
You say that you're not an expert in social media, but, you know, the Instagram... Yeah, but, you know, and I do think I hear your point, because I do think when people think about experts in social media, there's so much to unpack, you know, and there's lots of different ways that people can be successful, some of which you've mentioned. But I honestly think that at the core of social media success is about having your own, I'm going to sound a bit salesy here, but like your unique selling point. Like, what is unique about you? What makes you stand out from other bakeries, you know? And I think
your tone of voice is something that you've, you know, like really, really worked on, and you know what's going to work for your brand. So
the thing that I do on social media is anything that I've worked on. It's purely knowing how to write certain things in a certain way and understanding humans. If it wasn't on social media, it would be in another form. It's just that the social media is the way of getting that out in the modern world. So it's not something I've worked on. I don't sit there trying to construct posts for half an hour. I don't think, is it the right time of day to post it? I don't really do any of that. I write a post that I would, the way I say it, and then it is right. The reason I think that it is good is because of that. I'm able to write in a very relatable way for our audience. And I think that that comes across as being something that's constructed. But really, to be totally honest with you, it isn't. It's just the way I write.
Yeah, because the tone of voice of Get Baked, you've mentioned it earlier, it's like an attitude. So it can come across as... Actually, how would you describe the tone of voice of Get Baked?
It's dry, sarcastic, it's genuine, it's unapologetic, and it's honest. And I think also the main thing, it's quite self-deprecating. I think that helps a lot. I think what Get Baked is to me, what I think it always will be, and why it's... There's a reason why a normal Facebook page with a normal following of however many, 70,000, would put a post on and get very little engagement, because most do. And there's a reason why we don't. It resonates in a certain way with a lot of people, I guess. I think one thing that we don't do, which in my opinion is where a lot of businesses fall down on social media. I don't want to be judgy of other people's social media, but a lot of it I find quite cringy. We don't really have a lot of chintz on our social media. So there's no unnecessary posting of random things for this. You know, if it's on there, it's on there because it's worthy of being on there. If it's not on there, it's because it shouldn't be there.
Chintzy is an interesting way of describing it. But a lot of businesses won't speak just as bluntly, if you don't mind me saying bluntly, because it is kind of blunt. It's just straight to the point.
People think because we have a bluntness that we would be offensive to... We would never... If you look, we have never, ever, and never, we never will offend a group of people. People think we're going to go after vegans. Like, I'm not... That's absolutely absurd to even consider doing something like that in business. We might be blunt and sort of humorous, but we're not stupid. I mean, there's a big difference between knowing your audience and thinking you know your audience. There's a business, I mean, I don't want to talk about anyone else's business, but there's another business that they actually messaged me to tell me they were doing this, which I found strange anyway, but they've essentially copied our style. They're a dessert business that they've started using even our phrases on social media, and they've started trying to change their social media approach and basically copy Get Baked to the point where people have sent me links saying, have you seen this? It's funny. And it is quite funny. But because they don't understand the intricacies of how to do it, it comes across as extremely offensive.
You mentioned that, you know, you might be blunt, but you're not stupid. But I think it's also important there. The other word that popped to my head is that you're not mean either. Like, it's not intentionally trying to isolate people. It's very much a tone of voice that's adopted. So you do stand out. You've got loads of international followers. I've seen your story and I've seen Get Baked picked up. I encountered Get Baked from an account based in New Zealand.
Yeah, we're quite big. We're quite big in New Zealand.
You know, like, that's amazing. But yeah. I do think it's interesting to hear you talk about this, because obviously there is a very fine line then between getting that balance right, you know?
There is. It's very, very fine. It's very difficult to replicate, which I like. I like that. And I think it's, you know, if you're going to have a dessert business, it's difficult to enjoy it day to day if you can't have fun with what you spend most of your time doing, which what most people spend most of their time doing now is being on their phone. So if you can't do that in a way that you actually get fulfillment from and you actually enjoy it, because I really enjoy it. Like, I get a lot of enjoyment from posting. It's not a chore. It's not like, oh, I don't know what to do for content. I don't know how to, you know, I've not posted properly in a while. The engagement's down. I see that all the time. One thing that I never understand is when businesses, they'll do a screenshot of their engagement. It'll be like, oh, I don't know if anyone else is feeling this, guys. Like, our engagement, for me, that is like, that's the biggest sin in social media, is talking about your metrics. Business owners that talk about their reach and stuff, it's the most cringeworthy thing in the world for me. I think not having to worry about social media for your business, it's a gift. And really, if you don't have a decent social media following in a customer-facing business, you're essentially dead.
Well, it is definitely the way the world is going. And so to speak slightly in defense of people who do worry about the metrics, I totally understand why they do. Anything with a number attached to it, you inherently as a human want to build that number up. But what I find quite interesting, and some of the people we've spoken to on this podcast, is, you know, we're exploring conversations and stories where people or brands have gone massive and talking about it. And a real recurring theme, and I think it's almost like the magic potion of social media, is that people are authentic. And the other thing that you said there, which I just love, is you have fun with it. Because I think, again, on social media, it's different from television, it's different from print, it's different from all of the other mediums where you can connect with your audience and you can connect with them all throughout the day, any day of the week. And if you're not having fun and if you're not being yourself, it'll get dry very, very quickly.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me all the time, what do I do on social media? I say, well, firstly, who are you? Should you be posting on your social media? Because if that's not your skill set and you're not good at writing posts, you shouldn't be doing it. Firstly, you should be paying someone to do it because it's very important. And every time you're posting something, then think about it from the perspective of the person that's reading it. Because businesses just become, here's what we're selling and here's how much we're selling it for. And I very, very rarely talk about price. Very rarely, because it's just boring. You know, very rarely do we say, you know, buy it now. I don't post like that because that's the way everyone else does it. I don't consider any of it really. And really, we are a social media business. We don't pay a penny for any ads. We don't have any marketing budget at all. And I don't think we ever will really.
Isn't that wild? Like, isn't that wild that you as a dessert business who sells cakes, you said a social media company, and yet, you know, you've never spent a penny on advertising. You've never like had a marketing budget because you have now got this huge online community. Can you tell me about how that affected your business then?
I mean, directly in terms of levels of trade, it hasn't, to be honest, because we were busy anyway. And there's only so much we can produce from one site currently. So it hasn't affected the business in terms of instant revenue. But in terms of opportunity, obviously, it's resulted in large amounts of exposure, which have resulted in other things. So I've signed a book deal, which I think I probably would have done eventually. But I wouldn't have done this soon if Sprinklegate didn't happen, because it gave me that level of exposure. So it's affected us in that respect. And then it's obviously given us a worldwide audience, which has meant that we sell more merchandise all over the world instead of just in the UK. And it's meant that we can feasibly think about actually opening locations in other countries that probably wouldn't have felt like a possibility before, unless it was a lot further down the line. In terms of the sprinkles, that's resulted in launching our own sprinkles brand, which is a separate business to Get Baked. It's not going to be under the Get Baked brand, purely because, for a couple of like businessy reasons, but also because it will still be voiced very similar to Get Baked. We're going to have a lot of customers that are bakeries, because we're going to sell sprinkles to both consumers at home and also bakeries that use them on their products. We will therefore be sharing a lot of their images of our sprinkles on their stuff. And we don't want to do that on Get Baked, because we'll be sharing, not that they're competition, but we'll just be sharing images of baked stuff that isn't ours. And it'll be a bit confusing.
Yeah. It's like a bit of a conflict of interest, really.
It's like a conflict of interest. So it made more sense for us to have a separate brand. The brand is called Expensive Sprinkles. And I like the idea of Expensive Sprinkles because it's ridiculous. I don't think anyone in the history of retail has ever thought to name their product expensive. Because even if it is expensive, you don't call it expensive, you call it luxury. It's just like the whole strapline of Expensive Sprinkles is that they're extortionate and they cost a fortune. They're expensive. There's no getting around it. They just cost a lot of money. And if you want them, you want them. And if you don't...
Yeah, no two ways about it.
Yeah, which is great in a lot of respects, because it means that we can charge a premium for them because they're expensive sprinkles. So yeah, we're Expensive Sprinkles is launching as soon as we've received the Expensive Sprinkles, which are coming from Costa Rica, which is
an expensive location.
Yeah, it's all very expensive, and our first shipment is five tons.
5 tons. Yeah, of sprinkles from Costa Rica. This is suitably absurd.
And I'm like the Pablo Escobar of confectionery. It's quite funny. Really. The funny thing with sprinkles as well is that the smaller volume you sell them in, the more the margin. So it's like drugs. It's like selling drugs, really. I mean, but we're selling them in glass bottles, which is quite unusual. And it's another element to have fun with on social media. What we're essentially doing is marketing it like a perfume, like a really expensive Dior perfume, for example. So it's going to be sort of, it's going to look like a perfume Instagram, but instead of holding a bottle of perfume, it's a bottle of sprinkles.
I love that.
Yeah, and that's the sort of aesthetic we're going for.
My final question is, what did you learn from this whole palaver, and how did social media play a role in everything that went down.
It would never have carried anywhere without social media, because that was the only place, well, that is the only place where anything becomes anything now, really. We're in a world where if it hasn't gone viral in some degree online, it hasn't happened. So there's that. I mean, it's played that role in the respect that it made it a thing, which is everything. And then what I've learned, I haven't really learned anything. I really haven't.
I've learned nothing from this.
I trust you.
I love the honesty of the response.
Rather than tell you what I've learned, I think what I would do instead of that is probably give someone advice if they're going through a similar situation where they find themselves in a position where, for whatever reason, they end up with a global audience inadvertently, is to absolutely forget everything apart from that for the time that it's happening. Because you only really get one chance to maximize on it. If you don't do it while it's happening, you will never catch it, ever. It's gone. I could have happily had an interview from the BBC, gave an interview, done a couple of interviews, and just sort of left it. And it would have been fine. And that's probably what most people would have done, which is it would have been a terrible mistake. Or I could have done what I did and then result in things like being on this podcast, signing a book deal, doing pop-ups in America, and potentially, you know, massively growing the business. So yeah, maximize it.
You've been listening to Social Creatures with me, Kat Anderson. Many thanks to Rich from Get Bit for joining me today, and to Sprout Social for making this podcast possible. Make sure you catch the rest of the series by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform, where you can tune into a new episode every 2 weeks. You can continue the conversation around today's episode by getting in touch on our social media at Sprout Social, or by sending your social media quandaries to our agony aunt Stacey by emailing soundadvice@sproutsocial.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.